You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you're having a great week. And I'm telling you right now, plan for Friday night. You're going to binge watch Love is Blind 2. It's the first batch of episodes. You guys, I watched them all in one night. I think I started at like 8:30. I didn't go to bed until 2:30. And that, keep in mind, I wake up at 6 o'clock. I could not stop watching the show. So if you remember, this is where they have 30 men and women meet. And the men are separated from the women, and then they're separated into pods. So you're sitting in a room, and there's a wall between you, and you are dating that way. You're getting to know someone by just chatting with them. And over the course of 10 days, you figure out if you are a match with somebody. And then if you feel like you're a match, you get to meet in person. And soon after that, you pack your bags, and you get to go to a retreat and spend time with that person. Eventually, moving in with them for a period of time, and then figuring out if you want to get married. What surprised many people as part of the social experiment is that there were two couples that stayed married from it and are very, very happy. So it begs the question, is love blind? Can you find someone that you haven't even seen what they look like? So what I love about this is it has all the same elements of the first season where you're going to be screaming at your TV, like, why would you think you would be a great match with that person? Or, oh my gosh, they're so perfect for each other. And then when they get together and all the couples get a chance to see the person that maybe was their backup person, right? Like, maybe I could have been a match with that person and then seeing them with someone else. And then once you see everybody, are there conversations that you have with somebody who maybe was not on your radar before? And suddenly you're thinking, maybe I chose the wrong person. It has so much of that. And again, you're going to be screaming at your TV, and it's perfect for Valentine's Day. So if you want to stay home and just binge watch something, I'm telling you, Ticket to Paradise, Love is Blind 2 on Netflix. I mentioned last week to watch I Am Georgina on Netflix. Some people are like, have you lost your mind? And I have not, and here's why. I think it's fantastic when a great unscripted television program, streaming program, gives you a window into someone else's world you probably would never meet, and especially if it has to do with somebody who lives in another part of the world. I want to see things that show me a totally different world perspective through the lens of somebody who has a completely different lifestyle. I find it fascinating. So in the case of Georgina, it's about the daily life of Georgina Rodriguez, a mother, influencer, businesswoman, and partner to Cristiano Ronaldo. He is one of the world's best and highest paid athletes in the world. He's a Portuguese soccer star. It may be because my husband's Portuguese, but Cristiano is officially the most followed user on Instagram. I think he has like over 400 million followers. But what's interesting is that football fans can't get enough of his process on the field, but they're equally as invested in his personal life. So Georgina is from this very small town, northeastern Spain. Her Argentinian father was jailed for cocaine trafficking in 2003 when she was just 9. I mean, she's kind of like a real housewife. So she meets him at a Gucci store while she's working and they instantly fall in love. And she'll say things like, I've worked hard my whole life. And I'm like, you worked until you were 22, but okay. When she meets him, he already had a 7-year-old son. And the interesting story about him is that he has had surrogates for his firstborn and then a set of twins. And then he and Georgina have a daughter. And now Georgina's pregnant with a set of twins. So it's also just fascinating, like, you know, how this family kind of grew quickly and the backstory on that. It's a great thing to deep dive, I'll tell you that. But just an interesting window into their life because they live in all these different properties. And yes, at times you're going to go, I cannot even imagine what it's like to have that much money. But then there's part of it that's sweet because despite the fact that there is all this money, there's a very soft, relatable side to her where she does kind of like to keep to her own group of friends whom she calls the darlings and they travel with her and her family. So I don't know. It's very interesting. I think it's a great binge watch if you're just looking for something that's, you know, kind of easy, kind of background stuff. It's definitely worth a look. It's called I Am Georgina. Again, it's on Netflix. I am very, very excited about this interview and I feel very honored because I got a chance to talk to Dominique Dawes. And I know when I've just said that name for so many people, it's just a warm feeling in your heart because she's best known for her tremendous success as an Olympic gymnast who competed in 3 Olympic Games, the 92 Barcelona Games, 96 Atlanta Games, and the 2000 Sydney Games. She won 4 Olympic medals and is a permanent place in the U.S. Olympic Committee Hall of Fame. She was a member of the gold medal winning Magnificent 7 at the 96 Atlanta Games. I know there are many people like myself who can remember exactly where they were when they were awarded that gold medal. She also won a bronze medal as she wowed the crowd for her stunning performance in the floor exercise, becoming the first female African-American gymnast to win an individual medal. And she also earned a bronze medal with the U.S. team in the 92 Barcelona Games and left an imprint in the sports world with her back-to-back tumbling pass. Known as Awesome Dawson, she began gymnastics at the age of 6. Her first and only coach, Kelly Hill, quickly realized her potential and became a sensation. She is a graduate of the University of Maryland College Park, served as president of the Women's Sports Federation for 2 years, and was the youngest president in the foundation's history. She's a mother of 4, and she owns 2 gyms. In September of 2021, she spoke out in support of former teammates who spoke at a Senate hearing on the FBI's botched investigation into abuse allegations against former USA Gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar. She said, "The sport of gymnastics, USA Gymnastics, has all been about medals and money." She added that her Olympic team's win in 96 made the organization extremely wealthy and inspired many gyms and parents looking for an Olympian or college gymnast of their own. And she added, "The very toxic culture in the sport of gymnastics," and discussed how it related to Nassar's abuse. What this predator did is he saw the vulnerability in these young athletes and he preyed on them and he took advantage of them. She executive produced with LeBron James Golden, the journey of USA athletes, elite gymnasts on Peacock TV, which is a spectacular 6-part docuseries chronicling the journey of 5 elite American gymnasts as they headed to the Olympic trials, offering a glimpse of the rarely seen moments that high-level athletes endure in their personal lives, training, and competitions. I spoke with Dominique about her experience as a gymnast under the direction of Coach Kelly Hill and the culture of U.S. gymnastics. She is a force, standing shoulder to shoulder with many of her former teammates, pushing for major changes in the way gymnasts in the U.S. and around the world are treated. Here is my interview with Dominique. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated mini skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KateCasey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KateCasey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KateCasey. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Dominique Dawes, this is a huge, huge thrill for me. I remember watching you as a little girl compete in the Olympics, dreaming that I could also be there one day, even though my mom put me in field hockey and lacrosse. I am so excited to talk to you, and I have such great respect for the career that you've built, especially the one post-gymnastics at the competitive level. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Okay. I have to ask you how you got to the point in your gymnastics career. What was the tipping point where you thought, and the team around you, that this is a child that's exceptionally talented and we can push her to practice more, like she could become an elite athlete?
I think it happened very early for me. My mom put me in the sport of gymnastics with my older sister, and I was 6 years old and she was 10. And I think my natural raw talent showed from day one. However, I was very rough around the edges, extremely high energy, extremely strong, loved to tumble, could spring off of a spring floor. But I think they started increasing my hours of training when I was around 9 years old. And that's when I started waking up extremely early at about 4:45 in the morning when I lived in Silver Spring with my parents. And I would get to practice for practice at 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. And then I would go back to elementary school, middle school, and would go back to the gym later that evening from about 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. at night. We also trained 5 hours on the weekend. And with my type of personality, even on Sundays, I would be focused on gymnastics.
So what was the kind of sacrifice that your family, you and your family experienced both financially and mentally?
Yes. I mean, it's an enormous sacrifice that both my parents made. I would say that even my siblings made for those that have kids that are in the sport of gymnastics and they're trying to compete at a very high level. The amount of commitment, the time is vast. And I don't think it has to be that way. But back when I was training, we were training 6 days a week. And like I mentioned, waking up very early in the morning, a couple of days out of the week for morning training. And then I was there till late at night, 9 p.m. if I got out of practice early, like on time. Many times I was kept after because I didn't get an assignment completed. Financially, it was tough on my parents. I came from a middle-class household. My dad owned a garbage company. He was the entrepreneur, but we didn't necessarily have a lot of money. And so I remember many times in my cubby getting like the pink slip or something stating that my parents were behind on tuition or assessment. And so that was a stressor, I know, for my parents at a very young age. But the physical toll that it takes on a young person is a lot as well. It's grueling. You're tired. You're frustrated. You're dealing with a lot. And many times injuries do occur if you're training as hard as many gymnasts are training. And so the toll was, you know, physically as well. And then socially, I think now as a 45-year-old mother of four kids, I realize, wow, I did not have a life. I mean, not that I didn't have a childhood. I did have a childhood to some degree that was in the gymnastics gym. But I missed out on those social aspects that I think is so imperative for a young person's overall development.
As you moved into the competitive world, you're around girls around your same age. Was it easy to form friendships with them, or was there this culture of competition so deep that it sort of it made it difficult to be close to kids that you trained with?
Well, the sport of gymnastics is an individual sport. You will get together for some invitational competitions and you will have a team competition, but for the most part, it's just you on the balance beam by yourself. And so your teammate that's there that's training with you is also your top competitor. And while I loved training with a group of young girls, many of them, we always wanted to try to one-up one another. And if someone learned a skill that we thought we were capable of learning, you were proud of the other person, but you knew that that was something that you wanted to learn as well. It was all about striving for that perfect 10 and competing, sadly, against your teammates. That's just how the sport is. And it's also the culture that the coaches put in place as well. You know, if someone's doing well, or if someone maybe lost weight, or, you know, when they're doing the weigh-in and we're all weighed in together one at a time, you know, there'll be comments about those that are, don't have problems, you know, you're in great shape, or, you know, looking good. And I remember those that had, or were deemed to have weight issues, which I was not one of them, they then had to run laps after getting weighed in. And just think about how that makes not only the athlete that you're shaming feel as a young person, but also the athletes that are friends with them or train with them, and we're just looking over at them. I remember vividly when I went to Marva Tots and Teens in Wheaton, Maryland, and there was a teammate of mine. I'm not going to say her name because I can't find her on social media today still. And she had to stay after practice and wear I think it's called not a wetsuit, but it's like a wrestler's sweatsuit.
Right.
And she had to jump on the trampoline for 30 plus minutes so that she would sweat off her, you know, weight and lose weight. And I remember leaving the gym and just watching her just jump nonstop. And I was just like thinking to myself, how humiliating, you know, that experience is for such a young person. I myself was young. I was like 11, you know, years old, 12 years old. And just to think how it took a toll on her. And I'm very sure it did, because it showed when we were training together. And then today, you know, you can't find her.
Unbelievable. There are three Olympics that you performed in, which is unbelievable to say the least. We are probably most familiar with the images from the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta, which, you know, if you were of that age and you were watching, it was a spellbinding moment for Olympic history, American history, definitely for the sport of gymnastics, especially in the United States. What was it, the reality of being on that team, the pressure, and were you aware of what a mammoth event that was, or did they keep you sort of bubbled from that?
You recognize, if you'd seen the Olympics prior to becoming an Olympian, wow, the globe, like everyone in the world is competing on this, you know, this international stage, and people, you know, for those 16 days of glory, families, businesses, teams get together to cheer on, you know, their teams. And so I was aware of it being such a global and mass event, but when I was 15 years old in Barcelona, Spain, staying in the Olympic Village and going to PT every day, because I had injuries, as many of us athletes do, with Charles Barkley there all the time, or running into Carl Lewis on the way to the cafeteria. It was great experiences that I think for such a young person that lived such a sheltered childhood, I didn't really recognize how impactful, you know, and meaningful that moment was. When I was 19 for my second Olympics in 96, I understood it a little bit more. That's where I felt the weight of the world on my shoulders, and the team having the ability to make history and win and be the first ever women's gymnastics team, which we actually did to win gold. And then in 2000, I was 23 years old and very aware, you know, of, you know, the magnitude, and it was fulfilling in some ways, because I set those goals for myself and worked with the the team of coaches around me. And, you know, you're not doing it alone, even though this is an individual sport, there's people that kind of push you and help you get there. But it wasn't until I was at the 2008 Olympics in Beijing doing work back then for Yahoo Sports as a reporter. And I remember I was given a ticket to go to the opening ceremonies, which I had never been to before. You know, as an Olympic gymnast, you are not allowed to go to the Olympic ceremonies because they believe walking around a track in the summer with your fellow Olympians is going to tire you out and you won't be able to compete 2 days later. And wow. So we never got to go to opening. Many of us never had enough money to stay for the full Olympics to go to closing. So this was my one experience. And I remember sitting in this arena in Beijing and I was like, oh my gosh, I was in tears. And I was like, this is so magnificent. The world is coming together to support each and every one of these athletes. And it's not just about one athlete, one team, one country. You know, we are all united. And I think that's when it really hit me in 2008. And I wasn't even on, you know, on the floor competing anymore.
So that really just explains so beautifully how it's such an intense moment for the athlete that all of those things that we are accustomed to celebrate, they're kind of removed from until after they're done competing in the sport.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was, you know, I think you really don't know as a young child, you know, what you're signing up for. And, you know, you're told that you're talented and you love the sport. You're passionate about it. Your identity is so wrapped up in it that you don't see yourself doing anything else, which is why I really stuck it out for three Olympics. I mean, you know, the physical, emotional, social toll that it took on me, it was a lot. And I think if I had the confidence and felt like I could do something else, I think I would have dabbled into and developed a deeper passion for something else. But, you know, as a young person, that's all I knew. And yeah, that's where I felt comfortable. But as I look back now at 45, it's interesting how I was trained to feel comfortable, but with the uncomfortable.
I loved Golden, the journey of USA's elite gymnast, which you were so involved with. A great 6-part docuseries chronicling the journey of 5 of the elite American gymnasts as they headed to the Olympic trials. What I liked about it was you really did offer a glimpse of rarely seen and understood experiences of young gymnasts. What did it mean for you to be able to give the viewers this unblinking look at the sacrifice and the pain that comes with being an Olympic athlete?
Well, when LeBron James's company approached me, I would say it was the summer before the Olympics. So it was at the end of 2020. And we had already known that it was going to, the Olympic Games were going to be postponed to 2021. And I think they wanted to capture things that people had not been aware of what elite level gymnasts go through. And also with everything that had been exposed with regards to the culture of the sport of gymnastics, I wanted to be a part of this project if and only if we were not going to sugarcoat or edit or add some smoke and mirrors to things, because people don't understand. They will watch the Olympic trials. They will see an Olympic team that's announced. And then 6 weeks later, not a completely different group of girls, but there's different girls that are selected on that team marching out in the Olympic arena. They don't notice because it's been 6 weeks. And so they were kind of masked from that whole underground, secretive, selective process. And so I was thrilled to be the executive producer. And I shot all of my interviews with the directors prior to the shooting. And they were able to help me tell and help them tell the story based on my own experience in having so much knowledge in the sport. I think it did open the eyes for a lot of gymnastics fans, sports fans, also parents that maybe desired to put their child in the sport of gymnastics or their child is in the sport and maybe wanting to pursue a college scholarship or the Olympics. And I think it made them kind of pause and step back a bit and think, what's the long-term impact that this sport is going to have on my young person, physically, emotionally, psychologically, mentally, socially? And I think some people turned away from the sport. And I think some people have also opened their eyes to the right kind of coaching they want to make sure their kids are in.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I wanted to ask you about your experience as a young gymnast, because this was filmed in the aftermath of the USA Gymnastics Larry Nassar scandal. And so you were familiar with him as the team coach, and you've said that you were not the victim of assault, but many girls that you knew did, and that he was the nice guy. He did a masterful job of grooming young girls because he was the safe person that they could go to. When you look back in hindsight, can you see how this man slipped through the cracks of USA Gymnastics?
Yes, because I'm the victim of verbal, emotional, psychological, and physical abuse. And what Larry did, who I knew for 10 years of my childhood, is he watched what us athletes were dealing with and how vulnerable we were and how paralyzed we were, how fearful we were, how controlled we were by our private coaches, and how no one was doing anything and stepping in to protect us. And so what he did is he took advantage of that situation, and he further abused a number of young girls that I do know. I don't recall being sexually abused by Larry Nassar. I put up a very thick wall because I didn't trust a lot of people, but I was in still, though, a very abusive situation myself, but just unaware of it, because you look over and you hear the stories of the Carolis, and they, you know, limit the food intake of their athletes. And, you know, they make them do twice as many reps of routines or skills and things of that nature. And you witness this in public view at competitions, in training with other people watching, that I thought, well, that doesn't happen to me here, you know, at a competition, but it happens to me in some regard at home, that, well, my situation isn't nearly as bad as theirs. And so, but Larry saw it. He saw the look on our faces. And I remember at the 2000 Olympic Games, he was with us in 96, but also at the 2000 Olympic Games, he really was deemed as the nice guy, the safe guy, the friend. And he made it clear that you could come to him for anything. And I think, sadly, a lot of young, very vulnerable and innocent young girls fell into his trap and, you know, were taken advantage of and abused.
And also their parents. I mean, they were groomed as well in many cases, wouldn't you say?
In some cases, parents, there's a wall up between parents. And so they aren't allowed to cross that wall. And a lot of parents are controlled and fearful and intimidated by the private coaches and the gym owners themselves. I mean, look at the story of, I believe it was Maggie Nichols, who was athlete A in that documentary that I do believe won an Emmy Jennifer Say won an Emmy for, her mom spoke out, went to Steve Penny, and Steve Penny, I think, said something along the lines of, he'll take care of it. And she, you know, almost felt guilty that she spoke up because she knew it would jeopardize Maggie's chances of making the Olympic team. And guess what? She wasn't selected for the Olympic team, you know, and the mom in the documentary ends up crying because she is almost kicking herself that she didn't do the right thing and take it to authorities. But she felt like if I took it to authorities, it would definitely jeopardize all that her daughter had worked for to make it to the Olympic team. And so she thought the next best thing would be the person of authority, the president of USA Gymnastics, which was Steve Penny at the time. And really, we know now, what did he do with it? And so parents do live in fear. They live in fear to speak up to these private coaches and say, hey, no, my kid's crying. You're being too hard on her. You know, she needs to take a week off. She's dealing with physical pain, emotional pain. They then will then stop coaching that child, stop yelling at that child, and they'll ignore that child. And for an athlete such as myself, when I got ignored by my coach, that was worse than being yelled at and screamed and demeaned and laughed at. And so parents are in a tough situation when they don't use common sense and they don't step in. I know a story of one of my teammates whose dad kept telling her, I wish I would have pulled you. I wish I would have pulled you. But yet at the end of the day, she told me that he didn't want her to blame him for if she didn't make it to the Olympics or get a college scholarship. Wow. Now I'll say this today, you're a mom of five, I'm a mom of four. If my child, and I'm witnessing it, aware of it and seeing, hearing, what have you, is in an abusive environment, I'm not going to second guess my decision. I'm not going to care about what my kid thinks of me today. If they're going to kick and scream and no, mom, this is all I know. My friends are here. I'm going to care about what my daughter and my son think of me when they're 25 and 28. And I explain to them, I took you out of an environment that was going to tear you down. Now, I used to have my oldest daughter at the gym that I came from. And I remember having so much fear and anxiety taking my daughter there. And I'm thinking, what am I doing? And I convinced myself for a minute and my husband, I said, I'm going to be able to protect her. If I'm right there, she's not going to be ripped down. She's not going to deal with and experience what I dealt with. And I remember one day I was standing with my former coach and she said one of her underlying teardown comments to me. And she was referring it to my daughter who was just jumping as a free-spirited three-year-old on a trampoline. And I remember getting in my car and I said to my husband, when I talked to him about it, I said, oh my gosh, I don't know if I'll be able to stand up to this person. I've got to rip her out of this gym because I don't want my children to go through what I went through. My advice to parents is speak up, stand up, and get your kids out of those toxic environments because you are going to spend your children's teen years, young adult years, trying to put together the pieces that unhealthy, toxic environment ripped apart in that young child.
The Caroli experience, you had the ranch experience in 2000. I think there's a generation of girls that grew up thinking to be coached by them would be this incredible experience. And I know that you've said you've had your own experiences there. Countless other athletes have said as well. But there still seems to be a lot of athletes that are, they've made public statements saying that they're confused by any negative feedback about the Carolis. Why do you think that is? That some are dismissive about the very real and deep experiences that many gymnasts experienced at their ranch?
See, this is the thing. I think people like to believe that it's just the Carolis, that it's Bella and Marta Caroli. And you have to look at the whole picture. And yes, there were things that people saw or were aware of, but it's the private coaches. And when I have started speaking up lately, and it's very hard for me to say the individual's name, but I recognize I have power today in speaking my truth because you know what? It's my truth and it's my experience. So believe it or not, it's not the big bad Carolis. believe it or not, it's not the big bad USAG. Now, were they aware? They've even had an article out there stating that they were aware of the abuses and they rewarded coaches for it. They're trying to change their ways, they claim, right? But now it's time to turn the spotlight on these private coaches.
Wow.
These private coaches that each have names, but no one knows their names because they're not Bella and Marta Caroli. So a lot of the media wants to lump it up as USAG or Bella and Marta Caroli, but no. Now, were there good moments? Yes. But I do not want my four kids to experience what I experienced. I came from a very abusive and broken household, and it was a perfect storm for her to take advantage of a very vulnerable and innocent young child. And that is exactly what she did. And so my thing is, it's these private coaches that are still coaching these athletes using fear, using control, using intimidation tactics. And for some reason, parents are sitting in the waiting room. They used to see Dominique Dawes's name on the wall, but I've gotten that ripped off that wall. And they are looking at the fact that, wow, Dominique made it to the top. Look at her today. She looks happy. She looks fulfilled. She, you know, her journey. However, I went through very dark moments that I shielded from the world because I didn't feel comfortable to speak my truth. When everything came out in 2016 with Larry Nassar, that's when I started sharing my full truth with people outside of the bubble of gymnastics. That's the problem. People talk about the abuses to people that have gone through it or witnessed it, and we just think that's normal. I shared it with my husband, who was a school teacher for 19 years, and he said, wow, this explains a lot of your insecurity, lot of your fear, a lot of your self-doubt, because he couldn't understand. And he's like, and that is abusive. And that's how the monster of Larry Nassar took advantage of, what is it now, 500, you know, young women. But just think about the amount of private coaches, the hundreds of young girls that these private coaches have damaged and what type of destruction they've left in their wake. I think a lot of people have this image of myself or Olympians standing on top of a podium, but there was a lot of pain and a lot of ripping down and a lot of abuse that need not go on. And it went on with me in the past. And I just received a letter from a coach that was at a national training camp. And the individual, I'm not going to say who it was, said that she continues to see the abuse and nothing's being done about it from private coaches. Wow. And so there needs to be a change and there needs to be an overhaul. And in my opinion, they need to retire and allow those that truly love working with kids and care about the self-esteem of young kids to take over and really help this sport flourish.
And I know that you in your gyms really carefully vet people. And for you, it's not about the achievements always. It's about the person's character, their heart, and the best interest of children. What is your last piece of advice for parents as they're looking for the right gym for their child?
It really is about the people. It's about it's getting the right people that love working with kids, that are happy, that are self-motivated, that enjoy life. Now, are they bubbly and happy every single day of life? Of course not. But the staff that I have and I hope to continue to build have this deep passion and they care about the words and their actions and the impact that they have on children. And they recognize that they're role models. And I believe all of them probably are honored that they're role models. Like, wow, I can plant that positive seed in a young child. My program right now is strictly preschool, recreational, and ninja. We don't have a competitive program because my desire is to keep this healthy culture intact with coaches that love working with all ability levels and all kids that are in our program, no matter what their aspirations are. And then eventually we will grow a competitive team, but we're going to keep the culture of empowerment, of encouragement, of positivity at our core. And the problem is in the competitive world, it's very competitive. It's very cutthroat. If you're trying to get a kid to learn a difficult skill, people will tear you down or yell at you or punish you or keep you after practice. When I walk into my facility today, and I'm not there all the time, I'm not a coach on the floor, times where I've seen tears is when kids are leaving because they don't want to leave.
Oh.
Kids walk in and this is the highlight of their week.
Yeah.
Not because Dominique Dawes's name is on the door. That helps with parents because they maybe grew up with me, but more importantly, because the coaches care about them and it shows. And they know the coach not only knows their name, but knows, you know, what went on in their week or, you know, wanting to converse with them and know them as people. It's not about having identities wrapped up in gymnastics only. And that's one thing I told parents early on. I don't want to see you living in my gym. You know, it's a recreational program. I want this to be fun. I want this to be fruitful for your kids. But I desire for your kids to have a well-balanced childhood, to not wear leotards 24/7, and to have friends that don't wear leotards 24/7, and to get out there and try different activities. And that's one thing I'm striving for my four kids, and what I also wish that I had for myself.
I really commend the hard work that you're doing. And I know that you have made an enormous difference in a lot of young people's lives, but adults' lives as well. Where can people find you so they can learn more about your gyms, your book, everything that you're working on?
Well, they can go to my website. It's the longest website ever. Once you type it, your computer remembers it. It's DominiqueDawesGymnasticsAcademy.com. Our first location opened July 2020 in Clarksburg, Maryland, and we'll be opening a second location in Rockville, Maryland, fall of 2022. And we're super excited to continue to expand in the DC, Maryland, and Virginia markets.
So if you have a child in that area, and I know I have lots of friends that do, you need to go immediately. I thank you so much, Dominique. You're a great inspiration. Thank you for all you do.
Oh, well, thank you so much for your time and all the work that you're doing. I appreciate that.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guest, Dominique, and remind everyone to click subscribe, leave a 5-star review, join the Facebook group Reality Life with Kate Casey to talk about this episode and others. You can follow me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. My Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. Check it out to see my must watch list, which comes out every Monday of what to watch each week and what I'm watching throughout the week. You can get that list at katecasey.substack.com. Again, that comes to your email every Monday. It's a great guide of what to watch each week. You can find me on Cameo at Kate Casey and my Patreon for bonus episodes. Bonus episodes, it costs as much as a cup of coffee at Starbucks. That's it. You can check it out by going to Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey. Hoping that you're having a great week, and I can't wait to circle back with you on Friday about Tinder Swindler on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients, popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.